Sump City Radio, a Necromunda podcast, is best listened to with headphones for maximum quality and effect. The show may contain profanity and mature content, not suitable for Jews under the age of 14. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, listeners. I hope that you're well. Oh, yes, it is I. I've come Steve. And yes, this is an unusual start to Sump City Radio. Where's the beautifully crafted and elaborate opening that we've come to love, you cry? Well, don't worry, that's coming in a moment, but I'm here just to give you a little warning before you proceed down into the underhive with us. Due to delays, technical issues, and having a lot to talk about, episode 9 came in at a whopping
5 hours and 55 minutes!
Yeah, I know, right? So, as a first, we've split the episode down into two parts. This is part 1, and you'll hear me again briefly at the start of part 2. So we hope you enjoy this gigantic episode. Now, close your eyes and imagine the grim and dank darkness of the Underhive. You stand on a service gantry at the edge of the sump, which is bubbling away below you. You can smell its rancid chemical stench as it singes away your nostril hairs. You can see two figures moving down the debris-covered shoreline towards you.
Okay, and in 3, 2, hundreds of Underhive citizens have turned out today in the heart of Sump City to make their displeasure of the way the zombie plague has been handled known. The biggest issue seems to be taken with the elected official of Sump City, Mayor Rumpt. Rumpt has come under fire for his incomprehensibly complex advice to the citizens of a sump, all the while proclaiming that he is the most knowledgeable authority on the zombie virus. But perhaps some clarity will be given when the mayor gives an address to the residents of some city later today from the safety of his pleasure barge, situated in the middle of the harbour. This is Scrofulous Pyle for Sump City Radio. Okay, is that good? Get that sent in. We've got another report to do live in about 15 minutes. Have they started the show yet?
Sump City Radio. Hello, listeners, and welcome to the 9th broadcast from Sump City Radio. I, as always, am Hive Scum Steve, and with me is partner in crime, Chris Underhiver Iden.
Hi, everyone. Hey, Steve, do you mind if I shut these windows? Those protesters are doing my absolute pie-in.
Yeah, sure, no worries. This should be shut anyway. What's the deal with all the protesters? I missed Scrofius' report earlier on.
Oh, it's that bloated prick, isn't it, out on his barge?
Okay, yeah, why? What's he doing?
Apparently, he's got some address to make to the people later.
We should be able to hear him quite clearly from the roof if we want to go and see what's going on. Anyway, let's get this episode announced and let all of our lovely listeners know what it is that's coming up in the rest of the show. Okay, first up, we hear from Natomi Scalto and Scrofulous Pyle with an atmospherics and locals news report. Back in the studio, it's time for Rapid Fire, where Chris and I tell you about the Necromunda-related shenanigans we've been up to since our last broadcast. After Rapid Fire, we hear again from new show associate Drake Livingstone, Underhive Explorer. Next up, we'll be Hot in the Hive, where we talk about everything new that's going on in the world of Necromunda. Followed by the second outing of Pub Tales, where citizens of the Underhive have a chance to have a voice and share their stories. In a slight break from our regularly scheduled programming, we have guest host Tony Rhodes join us for the first half of a double helping of The War Room, where we talk about House Sesha. Then we hear from show associate Becky Boom as she spirals down the rabbit hole after joining the local Escher gang, the Sump City Sirens. In the second half of The War Room, we speak with guest host Pete Adamson, where we begin looking at the new and improved House Orlok. We then hear from Blitz and Krieg with what I'm led to believe is the last of their Murder Brawl Memories series. And lastly, it's our segment, Your Letters, where we read letters from our listeners, resolve any set competitions, hopefully set some new ones, and say some thank yous.
Jesus Christ. Right, well, that much content, Steve. I think it's about time we cracked on. Yeah, it's going to be like squeezing a blue whale into a condom at this rate. So, first up, Natomi.
Thank you, fellas. Typically, for this time of year, we are seeing an increase in moisture buildup as the cold from the sump below meets the still hot roof of the domes across Sump City area. As such, chances of precipitation are high, and tin hats or hazard suits are recommended while travelling. Speaking of which, because of the protests being held in the centre of Sump City, travellers are being advised to avoid the area. Whilst it has been noted that protesters are respectfully maintaining a set distance from each other, all it's going to take is somebody hiding a zombie bite and we could be looking at another outbreak. And who wants to be put in another lockdown, eh? Some city's waste outlet clearance teams have issued a statement to the citizens of the Sump asking that they not throw so much shit in the waters, otherwise we'll end up with increased tide like last year. They have set up disposal sites along the shoreline of Sump City Harbour so that if scummers have stuff that they wish to dispose of, they can do so in something like that that isn't the sump itself. Which means good news for scavengers. Get yourselves along to those disposal sites after lights out and nab yourself some crap before the scrunts get it. That's all from me. Now over to Scrofulous Pile for a live report.
Thank you, Natomi. Political tensions rise as the coveted position of mayor of some city is up for the traditional fourth solar cycle administrium reshuffle. The normally straightforward process of mortal combat has been eschewed due to the virus and replaced with an ancient practice of lot casting in order to protect the candidate from a death that is not delivered by a lethal blow. Standing mayor is claiming foul play, suggesting that all ballots not cast in his favour are the nefarious work of an underworld cabal of conspirators determined to sabotage his re-election into office. Doland of Rumpt has barricaded himself into his pleasure barge and is announcing loudly over the district wild unsubstantiated claims such as "I won, everyone knows I won, if you say I didn't win, you're a fake, probably a filthy Xenos that snuck in through the eye of Selene." This has attracted a great deal of anger from his supporters, who are now crying out for a recount of all the ballots that are not in the favour of Doland's re-election and are threatening violence on a large scale. Enforcer presence is high in the district in anticipation of violence. An official source tells me that they are really looking forward to it. We will return to the story once the counting is complete, when it is assumed that this will all be over and done with, because surely level heads will prevail. We'll bring you more on this after Doland makes his address from his pleasure barge later. In other news, there have been reports of an increase in Neotech raids on key sites of Orlok, Goliath and Escher importance. One witness said they saw what they can only describe as a graceful display of technological superiority in action, while another proclaimed, "They look shit. Who do they think they are? This is bullshit. When I was a lad, all we had was a stick, and that was probably a hand-me-down. Who do they think they are with their grav cutters? Ooh, look at me, la-di-da." He did continue, but he zoned out at that point. Citizens are advised to watch out for low-flying raid parties, which pose the risk of decapitation. Back to the studio.
Listeners, welcome back to the Sump City Radio Shack Yard, because you know it's now time for Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire! Oh, yeah.
Okay, Rapid Fire is the part of the show where me and Chris tell you what it is that we've been getting up to recently. We can only apologise for the noise that we've got in the background there. As you'll have heard from Scrofulous in his news report earlier, we've got a bit of a situation going on right now with protesters about the zombie virus still lurking around. So we're just going to have to try and get past that, Chris.
That's not a problem. If we shoot anybody by accident, then it's not our fault.
But thankfully, most of the people should be down in the sort of the bay area, because I think he's going to be out on his pleasure barge down there later on.
Yeah, no worries.
Oh, actually, thinking about it, if we head up on the roof later on, we should be able to get a good view of the address. Anyway, yeah, let's do rapid fire. So, have you got a reasonable amount of points this time, Chris?
I have not. I've got probably the most paltry amount of points I've ever made in rapid fire, but let's crack on. It's just been one of them months.
Are you feeling that you'd be going first with this or second? Oh, and after that matter, are we going with the auto pistol again, or are we gonna go dig out the stub gun?
Well, I believe I went first last time, so
Protocol
dictates that it's your turn.
Right, you got a timer ready?
Bear with me 2 seconds there, buddy boy, and off we go.
Right, as in you've just started?
No, I'm ready to go when you're ready to start.
Okay. Right, I am ready.
And go.
Okay, right. Well, first off then, I've been continuing to put bits of work into the booklet of Scrunts, and the community that we've built up for that is going mental. We've got like 80-odd people sat in that group posting up pictures of all these Scrunt ideas that they're coming up with, and it's just becoming harder and harder to try and see me fitting all this into one volume of Scrunts. Anyway, I'm going to try and fire this.
Oh, one hit. Good start, okay. Solid start.
Okay, right. So I've also started building some Orlocks now. So I've got a leader with a power pick and a plasma pistol sorted. I've also got a road sergeant with a combat shotgun and a wrecker sorted and two of the doggos so far. And moving on, firing.
Oh, and another one.
What is going on with this thing? It's probably the cold. Okay, right, I've also been collecting bits for my Nurgle-tainted Escher gang that I've been talking about for a couple of episodes now, and trying to plan out how I'm going to convert them. And honestly, I think I might have bitten off slightly more than I can chew by doing this combination, because you've got tiny little Escher bodies, and adding on all the sort of the Nurgle rot and things like that is going to be really tricky to do.
Cut them and stick them, bud. Cut them and stick them.
Yeah. Right, firing.
Oh, Nurgle's blessed, yeah, two hits.
As I've been thinking about Escher, I decided to get a model I've wanted since the 90s. So I got hold of the original Escher Heavy with the plasma cannon, because I saw one going for a reasonable price on eBay. However, it did turn up without the backpack, which was really annoying because I didn't mention that in the article. However, I have had a couple of friends come forward, so that's Jim Begley and Tim Eagling. The latter of which you can see his videos on terrain building, because he pops them up in the group quite regularly, so check those out, please. And they've sorted me with bits I need, so that's great. Another project to put on the pile. And firing.
Oh, and another single hit.
Okay. So one of our group members, Tom O'Bedlam, decided to start running a Necromunda RPG loosely based on a system called Blades in the Dark. So we ran it as, Blades in the Underhive. So we ran a few character building sessions for it over a span of a couple of weeks and managed to get one session in before Tom had other issues going on that he needed to deal with. So it's put a pause on the project for the moment. But again, it's another way that we could be playing the game in future. Certainly had promise. So I'm going to be shooting now.
Oh, and another two.
Okay, right. I downloaded Bloodlines on Audible, which we should really get an Audible affiliate set up, really, because we can be forwarding people towards that. It's by Chris Wright, part of the Warhammer Crime series that's set on a Hive world. So, yes, technically it's not Necromunda itself, but it's as close to as we're going to get for more Necromunda content on Audible. So that's another 8.5 hours of hobby time covered, and I'm firing.
And another two hits.
Okay, and I think this is the last one for me. I picked up the latest issue, which is 458, I believe, of White Dwarf, for the Outlaw Brute Rules and the Tactics card that they're doing. And shooting.
Oh, unlucky, mate, they all miss.
Okay. Right, yeah, so, I definitely think this thing needs to warm up a bit or something.
Not bad, though. 9 points, mate.
Yes, it's not my best, but it's better than nothing, really, so I won't complain. Okay, so what are we going to do here? We're going to pass me the device. Okay, well, I've got the timer ready, as and when you want to go on this one, but you might just want to reload there.
Right, so hang on 1 second. You had 9 points, but you took 3 minutes, leaving right. You 2 minutes over.
Right, okay, so that would be... Oh, hang on, so we start with a two times. So 2 minutes, so it's a two times multiplier then, isn't it? So is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm clocking that up to 18, Stephen, with my okay. rudimentary maths.
I'll take that. Right, okay, so in which case then, as and when you're ready, really, have you got that reloaded?
2 seconds, bud. Just catching a bit there. Ah, that's the bastard. Right, okay, and I'm good to go.
Right, in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so got quite a bit of work done on the Alchemistresses, my Escher gang. I built a plasma gunner using the Enforcer head and giving her some cool coattails swishing out. Ian Henderson donated a plasma cannon and a couple of other bits to me just for free, which was really sweet of him. So nice. I'm on building my plasma cannon girl now, and she's going to have a sweet green stuff poncho. I also got carried away building the roller skating juve, and she ended up into a power hammer wielding champion. And I've also started a new Death Maiden. Okay, taking a shot now.
Oh, wide of the mark there, mate.
Son of a bitch. Too much recap. Right, fun's been pretty tight this month, so I've just tried to knuckle down on the to-do list. So that's included getting the base Escher gang together. Not just the modelling, but the writing the list up and finding names for them, which I have done and sent off for my versatile terrain nameplates that I won in that competition. So,
oh, yeah, nice. I'll
hope for them anytime soon. Okay, ready for a shot?
Two hits.
Oh, that's more like it. Okay. Oh, yeah, I've got House of Iron, the book and the cards, which I've really enjoyed diving into. I think it's great for fleshing out the Orlocks, which I am going to have to obviously pick up at a later date when I'm feeling a little bit more solvent.
Yeah. Okay, ready? Are you going for it? Oh, one hit. Okay. Oops. Jesus Christ. Sorry! Right, okay, we're going to be better with the ricochets on that.
Inspired by the tease of the book of Artifice, House of Artifice, and a suggestion from my brother, just an offhand comment he made, I've developed the prototype from a Vansar gang. Now, I'd originally planned on stripping all of my original gang and starting again and going for a more grimdark approach, but after this, just two words, insect wings, that was it. It was like, right, I'm sticking with it. This is my gang. I'm going to develop from that core. And I've built the Luftvespa, which is kind of a insect-winged flying ganger, and they're going to be my Neotechs. So instead of having grav cutters, they're going to have wing packs.
Nice.
Okay.
Oh, two hits.
Oh, hey, I'll take that. And last but not least, Pete, my good mate, was good enough to pick up a copy of the new White Dwarf for me, because I just couldn't get anywhere that sold it. So, yeah, really sweet of him. So I've also got the Outlaw Brute Rules and the Tactics card.
Nice.
Okay, last shot.
And an additional two hits, and we're stopping the timer. And that is just under 3 minutes, as opposed to being over 3 minutes, which I think is what I was, wasn't it? So that would put you at a, what, times three, if I understand that correctly?
I believe so, but hey, I'll take the higher multiplier, not anytime.
So 21.
Hey!
Speaking of which, we really should go back over the episodes and count up the points for this, but I have a feeling that during the earlier episodes, we didn't keep such a good track of the scores, so I don't know if we've written them down anywhere or not. Michael Monks, if you can go back through the episodes and count up the scores for us, please, and let us know in the group, we'd appreciate it.
If you do that, you get a sticker. We'll have to make a sticker, but you'll get one.
To be fair, I've been thinking about making stickers for ages now, so it's on the back burner. Anyway, so yeah, that's a score of 21 points, so that one goes to you, mate. Right, so that's rapid fire, folks. Up next is Drake Livingstone.
Well, hello, listeners. I have abandoned my search for the Millisaur after my recent discovery of a tribe of small creatures, locally referred to as Scrunts. I have, like many other inhabitants of Hive Primus, heard tales of these crypto-hominids, but always assumed reports of them to be a case of mistaken identity or simply an overuse of chems on the part of the observer. Indeed, my colleagues at the Academy would no doubt scoff at this deviation, deeming this research whimsical and a flight of fancy, to which I would reply, sort of tosser, you're only mad because you still haven't shifted that rash that you got while spending time with the dusky fillies from the Plains Tribes of Escalon. But that's another story. The name Scrunt is possibly a mix of several root words, and several theories have been posited, none of which have been substantiated. But a favorite allegorical claim seems to be that the term is a compound word because Scrunt is easier to shout. For example, get out of my bins, you thieving Scrunt, is much simpler than get out of my bins, you thieving scavenging runt. During my time amongst the tribe, I have come to the realization that these hugely misunderstood creatures are often the recipients of verbal abuse and casual violence, as their forays into the upper levels usually coincide with a spike in cases of petty theft and mechanical sabotage. I have come to the understanding that these fascinating beings are mimetic in nature and prone to copying. Their ritualistic behavior is a facsimile of the patterns they observe in the wider hive. The Scrunt is a small bipedal creature that bears a striking resemblance to the legendary Martians, the Skitarii, with mechanical heads that are apparently grafted onto biological bodies. They are roughly 2 feet tall and wear hooded robes, which cover their heads and obscure their faces, often only showing the illuminated lenses that act as visual receptors. They possess a surprisingly complex and constantly changing language, which, as of yet, I have been unable to decrypt. A series of mechanical-sounding consonants and vowels, clicks and whistles, punctuated by what could generously be referred to as words. Despite this barrier to communication, I have noted that several of these words are assigned to tribe members of varying rank. Presumably, this is their name, or at least their title. The apparent leader of this particular tribe is reverentially referred to as Bosca, and his retinue are addressed as Hizmet. They seem to survive on a mix of simple proteins cultivated from fungal deposits or scavenged from refuge sites to sustain their organic bodies, and acquire salvaged or stolen technology as replacements for damaged mechanical components. I have yet to ascertain the origin of this species, and I am unsure as to whether they are fully aware of it themselves. Visibly sentient, they live in a societal structure resembling more primitive human enclaves and convey information that issues the roles within said society. Each individual busies themselves daily with the various routines and activities that sustain their existence, such as foraging, scavenging, and hunting. A relatively peaceful life form, they are, however, adept at fending for themselves against the local fauna, and can make quick work of any creature curious or dim-witted enough to venture into their territory. I will continue my observations into the lives of these mysterious...
Listeners, I must continue my report at a later date, as one of the hunting parties has returned carrying a fighter, whom I believe is referred to as Gavnik. There is a tangible aura of concern and solemnity not usually associated with the tribe. I will record my findings and publish them soon, in the name of science. This is Drake Livingstone, out!
I know you're gonna dig this.
You're listening to Sump City Radio. All night
long, all night. Okay, listeners, welcome back, and thank you very much, Drake Livingstone, for sending in that report. It seems that the Scrunts are getting very popular in the groups at the moment.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a pretty timid understatement, if I'm honest. Scrunt mania is how I would describe it.
Oh, you've just given me another t-shirt idea there. I just need to buy one of the old WWF style like cartoon t-shirts with the big like Mania logo over it, and do like a wrestling scrunt.
It was scrunt ripping its t-shirt off.
Next t-shirt idea sorted. Right, okay, folks, it's time for Hot in the Hive.
Hot in the Hive. This segment is lit.
Okay, so Hot in the Hive is the segment in the show where we discuss all the latest releases, leaks, community work, articles, blog posts, videos, and podcasts that we have seen for Necromunda. So, let's kick off with all of the official things that we've seen from Games Workshop. So, in fact, let's just start with the very last one that we added to the list for this. Chris, do you want to take this?
Yeah, we've got Brutes for Naughty Boys and Girls, Stephen. White Dwarf has a dedicated section on creating four new brutes for outlaw gangs, so no longer do corpse grinders have to bemoan their lot when they can't run a nasty hack damn bot, which is one of the options in there. We've also got...
Just as well seen as a built one, really.
It's almost like you made it happen by creating that. Yeah, there's a...
You are welcome.
There's a poetic justice in that. I appreciate it. Thank you. the Warp Horror, a Warp Spawn, which is, just as it sounds, an ungodly mess and amalgamation of bits and teeth and claws that you can run with your Chaos Gangs. A Sump Beast, which is whatever you want it to be. And then Chaos Ogryn. Now, I love the fact that you can kind of customize each one. And I know there's been a little bit of complaining in some of the groups that...
There has a lot. Complaining in one of the groups.
Well, hold my t-shirt. What is this? Complaining in the groups? No,
And sadly, this is a theme I think is going to run throughout this episode, isn't it? But anyway, more of that later.
We're going to be bringing some pep back into Necromunda, I think. I think it needs it. It needs a good old shot of optimism.
Why so spicy?
So when they dropped the article, obviously they've used one of the Gellipox from the Rogue Trader model to represent the Warp Spawn, the Warp
Horror,
is discontinued. You can't get hold of it anymore unless you want to pay with a kidney on eBay.
Same with the Ogryn, isn't it?
Same with the Chaos Ogryn that was part of the Traitor Guard, the Traitor Command set that came with Blackstone Fortress. And then the other two, one's a kit-bashed Ambot, and the other one's... I think it's a Izaneth Deepkin model.
Oh, Deepkin,
like,
yes. Yeah,
customized with like a different head on it. Done by Stevie Paints and stuff.
Jesus, dog. Oh. Sorry, dog's like sleeping right by my feet and he is just farted in. Oh. Like, the worst smell. God, you think the food smells bad going into the dog? Jesus Christ.
Got some warp spawn of your own going on there.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I completely derailed you.
It's fine. But obviously people are mourning that two of those are out of production. But it's like they're giving us rules and they're saying, go away, make whatever you want. And for me, that's coming back to the old kind of GW that inspires me to kind of just go, what can I do?
I can imagine when you first read that article, you were just like, okay, that's it. You just, I'm going to go away and build stuff now.
Well, that's it. Yeah. So I get to build a sick Ambot. I get to build a crazy kind of Cthulhu-esque warp horror. A Sump Beast, which, Jesus Christ, I mean, your imagination can go wild. And the Chaos Ogryn, I really like that one that is discontinued. But, you know, I've got a funny feeling that we're going to see models like that again. I imagine the expense of Tulin and the Ogryn and the Gellipox, you know, they'll want to recuperate as much of that as they can.
I hope so.
I'm hopeful, anyway. But if not...
The thought occurs to me, you get people sort of complaining, oh, it's not running anymore. If it's a model that's really that liked, why don't people just sort of like, you know, stick a petition or something, GW's way, and go, look, could you, you know, maybe rerun this one again?
Well, I can't see an issue with that. Yeah. It's worth a punt, isn't it? It's worth saying, we'll throw money at you if you... You know, they do made-to-order runs of different kits all the time, so it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Right, so yeah, they're awesome, really worth checking out. But also, we got a new Necromunda Tactics card, which is an Archaeotech device kind of card, but it sounds like it's essentially a boombox. So like a music player, and you get varying kind of results effects on that if you roll on a D6. Yeah, really cool, little fun kind of addition to the game. Again, just showing that GW are really behind Necromunda and supporting it.
Yeah, that's excellent. And say for those of us like myself, where it's like I only buy White Dwarf if they ever do anything Necromunda related, this is an issue that's actually worth buying. So that's issue 458, I believe it is.
That checks out with my notes, yeah.
Yep, fantastic. Right, so yeah, so there's that. Moving on then, what else have we had from official releases? We had the Underhive Informant come out, which was the Pause for Thought, where we've seen the latest update on the... Well, which one was it? It wasn't the Fear Cat, was it?
It was the Fear Cat, yeah. It's the Chimerix everyone's gasping for still.
That's the one, yeah. It was the Fear Cat that we got.
Yeah.
I personally really quite like the sculpt. I am going to say straight out the gate, I think it looks like the second or third evolution of a Pokemon, but that doesn't mean I don't like it.
No, I mean, it's very stylized, but that's not a bad thing, I don't think. Again, I'm a nightmare for getting a model that's perfectly usable and beautifully sculpted and somebody spent hours creating it and I'll cut its fucking head off and stick something else on, so I'm not really one to comment. Like, if I ever do that, it's not because I don't like the sculpt. It's because I like to make shit, and that's like that. That's my main interest in the hobby. So, yeah. But no, I think they've done a lovely job. And if you look at the original one that they teased like 2 years ago, that people have been asking for since,
yeah.
I think it's a vast improvement on that, and I prefer it to the illustrations in the books. I just think, yeah, I think it's a nice little model and something else to spend our cash on, basically.
Got to say, I'm curious though, because if you look carefully at the models, it looks like there's two completely different poses and head types. So you have to wonder if it's going to be a pack of two from Forge World or whether it's going to be a plastic kit like Ambot.
It's like my mum always said, what's better than a Fear Cut? Two Fear Cuts.
Yeah. So, but I don't know how that's going to come out in the end, but it would be pretty cool if it was plastic, because again, slightly easier to work with in most instances. But that's pretty cool. What else will be able to come out officially? Necromunda related stuff, just to shake things up a little bit. Let's not talk about models. Some literature that's come out. Spark of Revolution went up for pre-order on Saturday the 14th, so that should actually be out by now, I imagine.
I'm going to have to pick up some of the novels. I lent the Cal Jericho graphic novels and the one of the books off Pete, and I'm really enjoying them. It's finding the time. I think over Christmas, that's one of the things I'm going to do is treat myself to a bit of reading time and get some novels down.
Yeah. I should really do that as well. I've got to say, it's really weird. I've been struggling with reading this year for some reason, and preferring audiobooks. So I've been slowly sort of building up a stack of like Hive City related audiobooks, because there is only a limited number of Necromunda ones that you can get hold of. I should be doing the same thing, really. Oh, you mentioned graphic novels. Interesting thing. You know, a while back we had an article from, I think it was either Warhammer Community or the Underhive Informant, where they re-released a load of the old Necromunda books, and one of those was the Redeemer graphic novel.
Yeah.
That's disappeared. You literally can't get that Redeemer graphic novel anymore. Because I thought to myself, oh, I didn't get it at the time, I'll pick that up now. Nope. It's completely disappeared.
Oh, that's weird. Because I remember it was one of the presents that Tom got, wasn't it? For his
that's right.
For
yeah, Tom Carter, who did Chronicles of the Underhive. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
I was there when he got it. In fact, so it was one of those things. I was like, oh, yeah, need to pick that up at some point, because it was a reissue. Because that was like one of those really old books that they had back in original Necromunda, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It came out like roughly the same time as the Cal Jericho stuff, which I have to say, it's I never read the Redeemer one. Obviously I've seen the images, and you know what I mean. I'm aware of who he is, but with Cal Jericho, it's very 2000 AD. It's almost like if you took certain words out, it could fit into a lot of different science fiction settings. It's I'm hoping that the novel goes into it a bit more and kind of gives me a bit more behind who he... I know, you know what I mean? I've heard all of the kind of theories and stories in there. You know, you can't come into a game that's 25 years old and not have picked up spoilers. So, but no, I'm really interested to see how it reads out as an actual novel as opposed to... Don't get me wrong, there's some gorgeous artwork in those graphic novels. Yeah. And they can be really inspirational for kind of creating boards or creating characters, but they're like a neutered 2000 AD because obviously they don't have the amount of graphic violence that you would necessarily get, and you can tell it's kind of catered more to a PG audience. Still very good, and I highly recommend it if you can get hold of them, definitely. But very interested to see a book written from the perspective of an Ogryn.
Yeah, that's going to be really good. So let's skip from the official Necromunda stuff for a second to other hobby-related things, because otherwise we're going to hit the juiciest part of Hot in the Hive early, and nobody likes to peek early. So we've got a site called maxmini.eu, which I know from what you were saying to me a moment ago in the break, Chris. It's a website like Anvil Industries, Puppets War, Victoria Miniatures, all those other bit sites that you can find out there for various bits and bobs. It was one of the ones that I first heard about when I started doing the hobby again, and then I never really did anything with it, and then apparently they went under, the kind of receivership or liquidation or something along those lines, but it's under new ownership now. So they've got the website back up and running and they're taking new orders. And I think they've got some of the old stuff on there as well now. So that's maxminishop.com if you want to go and check that out.
Right, yeah. And bit of a promotion, I guess, with this one. We were contacted by Emma Wolf of OTP and they were just wanting to let us know that they're going to be launching a new wet palette on Kickstarter. They've given us this section of information to read out, so because we haven't kind of got our hands on them yet, we thought it'd be better if we just kind of read from the horse's mouth. So if you just bear with me 2 seconds there, guys.
The I'll put some cheesy like 1950s style supermarket music behind it.
Please do. Yeah. The wet palette paint station is what every hobby painter and artist needs. I won't do it like that, that's not fair. Right, so yeah, this is the information that they've supplied us with anyway. The wet palette paint station is what every hobby painter and artist needs. There are loads of different wet palettes out there, but we have added extras that make ours stand out in the crowd. And they work amazingly too. We're excited to be bringing this amazing product. We've worked on tirelessly for the last 12 months, and we've been working closely and listening to a group of hobby painters that have been trialing all of the prototypes as we've changed the design weekly to develop and tweak the product to come up with the very best wet palette paint station on the market for all hobby painters, pro painters and artists. It's functional, practical, portable, affordable, customised and amazing in capital letters. So, you know.
Sounds good.
The consumables work amazingly for days to weeks. They're cost effective, easy to obtain, no more being forced to buy replacements from where it's made. We're going to give all our backers the information of what is used, and you'll find it easy locally. We will have the option, you will have the option to buy from us, but you'll not be forced to. I do like that actually, because that is something I've noticed with them.
That was a thing, wasn't it? Yeah.
With wet palettes, you do tend to have to go back to the supplier to get the stuff, and that can be, if not necessarily expensive, it can just be a bit of a chore sometimes.
This is the thing with wet palettes. It's like I heard about them literally when I just started getting back into Necromunda, and I was like, what's the benefit? And then I had to sort of try and recall through the fog of time, how was it that I used to actually paint miniatures in the first place? And then when someone actually finally sent me one of my original models, I realised that I didn't paint them very well at all. So wet palettes, yeah, surprisingly did help a lot, because it helps to keep the paint that you're working with fresher for a lot longer, and then you've got a better base for sort of blending your paints from, at least I've found with mine, because I homemade one. I've never actually been able to find an official one other than the Games Workshop one, and I thought that was a little bit limited. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with this, because it sounds like they've got a whole idea wrapped around it.
Well, Steve, it seems like they've anticipated that very quandary that you've just raised. Why you need a wet palette, let me just read this quick out. Working with a wet palette is the single most powerful tool you can have for beginners right through to advanced professional hobby or miniature painters. Hobby and acrylic art paints are expensive, and this will help limit the amount of paint wastage, which was the point you just raised. It'll keep your paints fresh, it'll keep your paints usable for long periods of time. And this has been tested in Australian weather conditions, and it remained wet and usable 2 weeks later.
Nice.
Specifically due to the design of the palette. If the
set we know how hot things are in Australia.
Well, yeah, exactly. Poor bastards, especially with those wildfires they had.
Oh, God,
damn
it.
If setup instructions are followed, it'll do most of the work to thin your paints for you. Thinning paints requires a lot less water on the wet palette as the water penetrates through the paper and in turn keeps your paints moist. And in most cases, just a damp brush for thinning is all you'll need. Allows you to stop and start your painting sessions as needed without losing the paints that you have out. Amazing for advanced painting techniques. We will provide a link to the Kickstarter, so please go along and have a look. We obviously I can't recommend it yet because I haven't got my hands on one, but it's certainly worth checking out.
It's funny you should mention that, because I believe that they are going to send us a couple so that we can try it out for them.
Oh no, and afterwards I'm quite happy to do an honest review, but I don't feel confident in saying go and get it, guys. It does look good. I've had a look, and they've been posting it on some of the Facebook pages. In fact, what I'll do is I'll contact Emma and get it there. Join the group and put a post on the community page, because they've got like images of it all and it looks really nice and like definitely well made, and loads of compartments for lots of different kind of shades and stuff like that. Again, I'm like, ew, I started painting when Necromunda dropped again, and I was just using a normal palette and mixing, and my issue is that my what are you saying?
Sorry, you say, speaking of dropped again, my fucking dog. Oh, hey, you little bastard. It's so bad. It's being tears to my eyes.
Fucking chemical warfare.
I'm so sorry, mate. You crack up.
It's all right. No, like you were saying, I made my own wet palette because when I first got into the hobby, when Necromunda re-released, I was just using paints on a dry palette, and one of the points they bring up there is being able to kind of stop and start your sessions. Now, yeah, with two kids, two dogs, and a hectic life, I could get an hour to paint, 2 hours to paint, or I could get 10 minutes and have to put it down because some crazy emergency pops up and I've got to put that away and then go off. I used Darren Latham's video on how to build one, because the issue I had was finding the right kind of paper. And he actually showed the brand, and I won't say it on the podcast because that just seems a bit weird.
Yeah.
But there's the specific supermarket brand of baking paper that he used. And I've been having great results with it. I love it. I'm no expert painter by any means, but the ability to kind of put that down and come back to it 2 hours later and you've still got the same colours, you can still kind of colour match, and especially when you've mixed like a mid-shade.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do is try and find that perfect ratio again of like three drops of this and one drop of that.
Exactly.
So no, I really like them. So the only thing that's put me off before picking up a proper one has been cost, essentially. I've always thought I'd rather spend money on me miniatures, but I'm quite happy to test one out and see how I get on with it. And yeah, if I like it, I'm happy to recommend it.
So watch this space, basically.
Absolutely.
So, right, let's move on to the next topic then, shall we? So, we have had a update. What's the thing that they call it? Their little Twitch stream that they do. Is it previews or something like that?
Yeah, it's
It is Warhammer previews,
yeah,
isn't it? So, we had one of those, and very quickly into it, we saw some updates for Vansar. Now, this has blown up quite a bit on the groups. There seems to be quite a lot of controversial opinions on this one. Chris, your thoughts?
I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't here. I'm obviously a Vansar player. I've never made a secret about it. I was kind of... Obviously, we're anticipating some news. They teased with the silhouettes. And everybody, like, straight away on the groups, so even in our group, was like, ah, and you're going to get nerfed, and it's going to be this, and it's going to be that. For, like, because they had that five-day tease, and I think it was on the third day they teased the Van Sar silhouette. So yeah. I got really excited, and I was like, yeah, Van Sar's coming, yeah. And then it was all, stupid rad boy, tech heresy, da-da-da, which is all fun and games, you know what I mean, when it's just banter like that. I was not prepared for the furore that ensued, because Van Sar now have flying surfboards. They are literally putting the rad into radiation, which, yeah. And I was like, I can't really believe I'm seeing this. It's certainly not what I expected. I didn't know exactly what, I mean, a lot of it follows what I was kind of hoping for and anticipating. But yeah, apparently,
I think you had a good idea with the what's the name of the other ones?
The Archaeotechs.
The Archaeotechs. Yeah, you had a good idea because you said sort of like a halfway between an arachnorig and just an ordinary, you know, model.
Yeah, I'd say like mini rigs or experimental rigs or something like that was what I was.
But nobody saw
for.
Those grav cutters coming.
No, I would never have thought we'd get flyers. And they do look to be actual flies as opposed to the wreckers, which are more of a boost with a slight vertical aspect. Mm. Yeah, but apparently put a Van Sar on a surfboard and you get a shitstorm. I'd never run that experiment before, obviously, but yeah.
I don't know if I've mentioned it in the show, but for quite a while back, I was saying that I wanted to make essentially the Necromunda equivalent of Spider-Man. At least now I've got someone for him to fight against if I ever get around to making it, because we've essentially got the Green Goblin for the Underhive.
Yeah, the Green Goblin memes and the Marty McFly memes have brought smiles to my face a lot. Now, that's cool. That's, you know, take the piss out of them, say you don't like them, say you hate Van Sar. It's all good. You know what I mean? I think if we all liked all of the gangs, it'd be shit. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or if they were all just okay, you know, some people just put all of their money on a gang. You know what I mean? And they say, that's my house. And they really get into it. And I have to admire that. But you know what I mean? I like them all, essentially. There's a couple that don't appeal to me to play with. So I'll never have a Goliath gang. I can't imagine. Corpse Grinder, I built my alternate Corpse Grinders, but again, the play style doesn't really appeal to me. I'll probably try them at some point. And the Enforcers just don't light a fire in me. There's nothing wrong with them. The sculpts are gorgeous, the rules are okay, they just don't enthuse me.
Fair enough.
Van Sar got me aesthetically. I loved the way they looked. Obviously, got a few games in with them, quite a few games in with them, and quickly realised why a lot of people have a different opinion to me. And that high ballistic skill straight out of the gate, it's a real kind of curse. The fact that they were limited to, like, if you wanted to run them effectively, and I don't mean competitively, I don't mean a power list, if you want to run them really, like, just to get through a campaign, you were forced to kind of go down the either dual plas pistol, las plas, or plasma gun, plasma cannon. It's a plasma spam list with abusive the shooting skills, which is obviously the trick shot, the fast shot, the gun.
Well, as you said right at the beginning of this, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Yes, really, aren't you?
Exactly that, mate. That's exactly how it feels sometimes. Which is why, when I was anticipating this, I thought we'd get a ballistic skill drop, people would cool off a bit, you know, and I could run my Van Sar without people just calling me a cheesemeister or whatever it is that they want to call me, which is fine, you know what I mean? Whatever, as long as you... But I don't want people to just groan as soon as they see a Van Sar gang. I was hoping that we would get that. We still might get that, you know, that we haven't seen any rules.
Oh, absolutely. We've not seen any rules at all.
No.
Yet.
So that we could come in and they could all get kind of a bit of a ballistic skill reduction. We've seen that kind of balance and mechanic used in all of the other books so far. This is what the reaction to each new book has been, like a huge spike in kind of, that's not right, this isn't right, that's not very good. They got this, why don't we get that? It was the same with Blades and it was the same with Iron. But this is just something else entirely.
I completely agree. It was a very visceral reaction that people had to this. I am actually okay with what they've put out. The style of the Archaeotex isn't quite what I would have liked. Just that bit that hangs down the front for me feels a bit weird. You know, the plated armor that hangs.
Oh, the like segmented tabard.
Yeah,
thing.
That's yeah, the bit. Yeah, it's very ornamental, and I get that. That's cool. It's not quite my thing, but I think on the whole, it's pretty cool. The gliders, completely didn't see that coming, but I think yeah, why not? Because I understand that gliders and you know jet bikes and all this kind of thing are part of the lore of Necromunda going all the way back to like the 1990s. It wasn't like a completely massive surprise. It's just that, oh, I didn't realise Vansar were going to get that. And it's completely different to what we've seen so far. You could possibly say that maybe the Wreckers is going in that direction because it's a vehicle of sorts. But this is kind of technically the first actual vehicle that we've seen. But, and again, and aesthetically, I'm not so sure on it. Once I get it in person, might change my mind. But I have a feeling that I am probably just going to get hold of those Dark Eldar gliders and stick them on that if I can. Because I just really want to Green Goblin them up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the actual things that have been going around. Now, I did a breakdown of this because there was a lot of negativity thrown at it. And I didn't really understand why. So I thought, you know what, I'll break it down to the core points of why people don't like this and sort of see if there's actually any valid points behind it. The aesthetics, right. First off, if you don't like the look of the models, then you can just kitbash stuff. You know, that's been the same with any of the gangs so far. If you don't like the look of Goliaths or Escher or anything like that, you can just find alternative models or put things together from different kits. That's not a problem. So I understand that people go, I don't like the aesthetics. But that's it. That should be the end of it. Okay, fair enough. Let other people play with it. And with the revamp of Vansar full stop, when they first came out, people were going, oh, this looks like something out of Infinity. I don't like it. They're borrowing too much from that. If you go back to the original Vansar in the 1990s, they borrowed a hell of a lot from Dune.
You know, they were wearing still suits, Fremen still suits.
They were wearing the exact same thing. That you're going to borrow from somewhere. It's very difficult to come up with something completely original these days. There's a lot of influence from things, whether it be on an obvious level or a more subconscious one. So if you didn't like the look of them back then, you're not going to like where they go with them in the future, I suspect. There's nothing that's going to change people's minds that dramatically. And some people have said, oh, well, they're going down a very Necron route now. Do you not think that that's kind of the direction they might have taken slightly with it when they first brought these models out? But anyway, that's enough about the aesthetics of it. As far as I'm concerned, if you don't like it, that's fine. There's no problem with that. There's only so much you can say on it, really. If you go over the top with it, then I think that says more about you than it does about the models. I am disappointed that I didn't get the thing I had imagined I'd get. Okay, that's fair enough. You can be disappointed about that. That's entirely your right to be so. You know, we all hope for things in this game that we play, and we don't necessarily get it turn out the way that we think it's going to. But there's a line to draw with that. You know what I mean? It's like you can go so far with that, but then you suddenly start sounding very, very entitled. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think we all kind of get on that hype train and have the speculation and the kind of trying to second guess things before they drop. Yeah, you've got to manage your own expectations with that. There's nothing, you know, that's not up to me. If people are disappointed because they didn't get what they want, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But this ain't your game. you know, this is a company who developed a product. Now, the new books have given us so many options to play gangs in different ways that if you don't like an aspect of it, you can totally negate that, and you're not necessarily hobbling your gang's effectiveness because yeah. of the different kind of options that you do get, the different routes you can take your gang down. It's the way they've gone, and that is that. You know, that you can either throw your game away, or you know what I mean, burn your miniatures. Or just crack on with it, really, with that one.
So then, just going through these other points that I've sort of like dissected from the comments that have been made is along the lines of, I don't like the lore. I don't think that Vansar should have jet bikes or hoverboards or anything along those. I don't think that Vansar should have that. Well, as far as that point goes, one, if you want to go by the lore, we've not even had the book drop yet, and no doubt they're going to have fully updated it. They wouldn't have put them on them if they weren't allowed to have them in their lore, you know what I mean? And yeah. As I mentioned, they've had the jet bikes and all kinds of things like that since way back at the beginning of Confrontation, I think it was, wasn't it, with Brat Gangs?
Yeah.
So the precursor to Necromunda, so they've been there the whole time.
Exactly, but what people seem to have completely overlooked is that you don't even need to, you don't need to do research or look back, and you could totally negate anything that came before the 2017 drop, and we had Frykston Strix, who was a Vansar, who had flight technology.
Yep.
You know, he's been running around the games since the book that had him in dropped.
That was one of the Gang War books, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. So there's kind of hints towards it all the way along. Then you've got people going, well, it's not the lore that I believe in. But that's okay. You can invent your own lore in your head. But at the end of the day, it's not your IP. And if they want to change it, they're going to. And they do quite frequently with everything in their entire range from Warhammer 40k through to fantasy. So, you know, I think that's something that you kind of need to suck up, really.
Yeah, if it was a fan expansion or, you know what I mean, a fan unit that had been developed, then yeah, by all means, yeah, actually, I think you've got the tone of Necromunda wrong. But to tell the guys who make Necromunda that they've got the tone of Necromunda
wrong. Yeah, you see what I mean?
It's like a little bit, I think what God meant to say.
So yeah, let's move on, because I want to get through this quickly so we can get into slightly more positive things. But then it's like, we've had two gangs come out now in a row that have had essentially heavily mobile units. I think that's probably the best way to phrase it, because they're not both vehicles, in my opinion. One's more of an added piece of equipment, and then the other one is an actual vehicle as such. So, yeah, highly mobile units, two of them in a row. What about Goliath and Escher? Well, firstly, doesn't fit into their lore. I use that word in air commas now. And secondly, if you'd have had a different release order, say Orlocks were the first one that came out and then Vansar were the last, would people have been complaining so much about two of them getting it and the rest didn't? I have to wonder. At the end of the day, we're getting Ash Wastes coming out eventually as well, weren't we?
Well, that's kind of what a lot of people are hoping for, is that it's indicative of future plans.
Yeah.
But even if it's not, even if we never get to Ash Wastes, I mean, war, like, you know, God forbid, I really, really, really want that. But that's a question that I'd ask myself, was that if we hadn't had them both back to back with the kind of the fast attack unit, which is what we're assuming they both are. It certainly is the way for Wreckers. If it wasn't Vansar that got them, if it was, say, Orlok that had got hover bikes, so it'd fit into that, would that have been a much different response anyway? Is there a certain amount, and I'm not suggesting everyone hates Vansar and it's all because, you know, I'm not sitting here like a victim. I like them. I'd make no apologies for
too.
It. But if it had been given to another gang, would the reaction have been different or not? Again, it's something we can't know, because Vansar do have them, and that's that. But at the end of the day, if you just don't like them, that's cool. I'm not bothered about that. Maybe, you know what I mean? Concentrate on some stuff you do like, and then...
That's it, yeah.
You know, that's what this hobby's about. And if you're, you know what I mean, spending time debating this and really kind of diving into it, then are you getting the relaxation and the escapism and everything else that you supposedly want for your hobby? I don't know. I can't tell somebody else how to enjoy their hobby. But it seems to me, if that's where I was, I'd be thinking maybe it's time to take up stamp collecting or something. I don't know. You know.
I completely understand that people get passionate about it. And we've had big discussions on that privately with a couple of members of the group recently as well. You know, people do get really involved in it because it's their hobby. But you got to remember where to draw a line with it. If you don't like something, that is absolutely fine. And I can respect someone who goes, you know what, not my thing.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. They're ugly, but, or they're stupid, or anything.
I don't
whatever.
Like it aesthetically. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. But then there's got to be a line that you draw, because when you cross that line, you just become a moaning bitch baby. And, you know, that you've got to then go, okay, you know, step away from this now. It's just not worth it really anymore, is it? So that's the conclusion. Yeah, okay, there are some valid points, but there's also a lot of stuff flying around at the moment where it's like, mate, come on, check your privilege. You know what I mean? So Anyway, I would like to draw a line under it there, unless you've got any more closing thoughts on it.
No, none whatsoever. Like I say, but yeah,
the bottom line is they're supporting the hobby that we love.
Exactly.
And speaking of which, that's a nice segue into what it is that we're about to talk now, which is far more positive. We've actually had an updated roadmap. So, yeah, this was a Warhammer Community article that went up very recently and is an updated roadmap. So what we have seen on it, and this is the interesting thing, is that the first bit is coming quarter one of 2021. We've got reinforcements inbound. It then goes on to House of Faith in quarter two, House of Shadows quarter three, and more that is currently redacted in quarter four of 2021. So there's one gang that's missing off of that. No Vansar. So the implication there is that they're going to be dropping in December.
It's either that or JW have seen the response and just dropped them. sorry, I didn't mean to take it back. Yeah, no, it does look very...
Like, yeah, fuck this, and if they don't want it, we won't put it out at all. Sod you, you're not having Vansar anymore.
It does look very likely that, we're getting a December release for Vansar, which a lot
great.
Of people were very optimistically hoping for. Like, come on. And it makes sense. Like, as a company, if you can catch up on a schedule that had been postponed by 3 months, like, that's what they'd done. They'd kind of set everything back by another quarter. And then to be able to say to your shareholders, actually, you know how we fell behind because of the world falling to bits? Yeah, we've pulled that shit back. We've pulled that shit right back.
Yeah,
there must
more
be kind of...
More power to them for doing it, if that's what's actually going to happen.
Oh, man, if it is, then yeah, that is fucking impressive. Top and bottom of that argument, yeah. Really. That's very impressive.
So in addition to that, what we can also draw from this roadmap, which is things that people have been talking about, is the actual names for Dalak and Cawdor. So we've got House of Faith for Cawdor and House of Shadows. Now, I know for the House of Shadows one, it had been... alluded to in one of the previous books, I think, that they've actually been called House of Shadows before, so people picked up on that and ran with it and were correct. House of Faith, perhaps a more obvious choice, nothing, you know, like with House of Artifice, that one was a bit of a what? Where did that come from? But with House of Faith, I think that people are debating quite a lot as to various other things that it could have been, like, House of Trash Collectors, or various other things. But
House of, there's been quite a few humorous suggestions, I think Faith fits. It's succinct. It's
absolutely, yeah. So I'm just really happy that we've got an idea of where it's going now, and that by the end of 2021, we're going to be getting stuff that we've not actually seen before. I hope. I would like to think personally, my personal hopes for the end of 2021 is that we will then get a massive box of Necromunda drop like we did with Dark Uprising. But it'll be, fingers crossed, us exploring something else other than Hive Primus. So maybe it'll be the Ash Wastes finally, because that is, people are so rabid for that as an actual game now, basically Necromunda Gorkamorka. With all the different houses and things having, you know, vehicles and all kinds of stuff like that, and basically playing Mad Max but Necromunda. I don't know whether they're just gonna keep teasing it and dragging it out as long as they can to keep that excitement there, or whether they are just gonna go boom, here it is. Or maybe they'll do a bit of a left turn. Maybe we'll end up going to the Eye of Selene and doing something there first. Who knows? I don't know if you've got any thoughts on it, Chris.
With obviously quarter four being the Christmas season again, I was kind of, I'm assuming that we'll get another boxed set, and what form that takes is really tough to call. Obviously, we saw the concept art that they did for the Eye of Selene and for the Ash Wastes. I would absolutely love that. Either of those, I'll take them. They're mine. You know what I mean? I'm all in, regardless. More Necromunda is just good for me. And that's, you know, it's the only game I play. And the more content they give me, the happier I am. I'll take and leave bits that don't interest me, but on the whole, another box set's a great way to get people in who didn't necessarily jump in at the beginning or at the Dark Uprising drop. And yeah, any expansion, any way to kind of, whether that's vehicular or space related, it's just got to be really, really kind of exciting, because obviously with ash wastes, you can start talking about mutants and ash waste tribes and things like that. Isolene, Jesus Christ, you could go anywhere with that, couldn't you? I mean, that's literally the doorway to the galaxy. So you could start.
I mean, to be fair, there's other options as well, isn't there? Because there's things like Hive Mortis and what was the other one? Is it Arcos or something like that?
Arcos is the one that fell, wasn't it, at the end of Gene Stealers, Dark Uprising?
Yeah. Oh, it was that one. Yeah. So what was the Gene Stealer one?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head.
There are other ways that they could go with it as well. But I think if we get something like that, that's going to be awesome. So yeah. Where we go from here is anybody's guess, really, but we know for a fact that we've got the rest of the houses wrapping up. We've got a whole quarter that's dedicated to additional reinforcements being inbound, and we've got pictures of various models. In the case of the Corridor guy, I'd completely forgotten about his existence.
Yeah, you've got that crazy kind of
Quasimodo kind of looking dude.
Yeah, the hunchback with the rats all over him and the heavy stubber. Obviously, we've got the resin, or what we presume to be the resin Orlok alternate champs, and the Fear Cat model there. I do wonder if we'll get any more with that, whether that we'll see some Dramatis Personae or other brutes like the Orlok Lugger and stuff. I'd be keen to see what comes out.
And of course, we've also got the possibility of Ansar ones as well. I mean, it might be a bit close to the release of, you know, because there tends to typically be the release of a gang or the updated versions in this case, and then there's a bit of a time period, and then you get the additional, like, resin reinforcements and things like that. But we never know, because they're trying to catch up with themselves. Maybe they put that out early as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, loads of cool stuff there. As for the community works, again, this month has been absolutely crazy chock-a-block full of stuff, hasn't it?
Oh man, yeah, it just blows me away, kind of the inventiveness and creativity of everyone. It's really, really cool to see.
So let's get through this nice and quick. So cue the gallery music. Okay, let's mention him again, because he just gets like a regular slot now. He's like one of those artists that has a, what's the term that they use for like a little setup in the gallery? That
like a residency.
Residency, there we go. Yeah, Vlad Flostein. He's basically got a residency in this section now, hasn't he? So this time around, he's created the crazy thing that is the under sump dive and salvage mech and the dread cyborg Orlok sump pirate Neckbeard Jones and his crew. And it's just incredibly inventive again. Really cool looking bits. I mean, that's a little sub that he created with the giant servo skull and stuff. That just looks so cool. Guys, go check out the pictures for Vlad. I'm not going to, you know, wax lyrical about him for any longer than he deserves, because he's getting a section every month now.
He's really talented, and he's obviously fucking really crazy. No, he comes up with some cool
stuff.
And he can
paint bloody fast as well, which is why I hate him. So. Right, moving on then. Kit Murphers, rattling propagandist with a flyer printer on his back. Again, we'll make sure that the pictures are in the group.
Yeah.
Have a look at this.
That made it onto my list as well. I think it's the only one that we repeated this time. It's just such a cool little characterful model. Yeah.
It's just got such a story with it, and the way that he's actually created that printer on the back, it's just brilliant.
He's just dropping pamphlets as he goes. Yeah. Good job, Kit. So cool.
Christopher J. Davies, who's been quite an active member in the community recently as well. I know he's posted up loads more stuff since this, and I think he might have done some scrunt stuff as well, if I'm not mistaken. But this particular model stood out to me because it's essentially Negan from The Walking Dead, but he's created him as an Orlok. So he's got the little bat there going across his back as well. Again, pictures in the group. Just a nice little conversion there, I thought.
Yeah, really cool. And he has, like you say, I've noticed he's always commenting on loads of posts, really encouraging and kind of just getting involved. Yeah, nice one. Cheers, Chris.
Speaking of which, Graham Shirley. Not only is he an active member of the community, but this is a scrunt post. Scrunts are becoming a regular thing now. As we said earlier on Scrunt Mania. So yeah, this is possibly one of my favourite Scrunt conversions that I have seen so far. He's actually gone to the extent of getting a Scrunt that's now trying to imitate the Wreckers of House Orlok with its own little jump pack. And he's the picture I've got on my list here is when he put up the In Works model, but he's actually fully painted it since. And it's just a beautiful little conversion. So much character in it. So yeah, Graham, nice one.
Oh, he's hugely talented. I'm hoping to get a game with him because he lives fairly near to me.
Right, cool.
Yeah, Pete plays.
Steal his scrunts and send them down to me.
he's actually a Golden Demon winner.
He's
an incredibly talented painter. We gave his Escher a shout out last month as well. But yeah, for character, you just cannot get better than this little kind of just about to get stratospheric with a twist and smoke plumes.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
You
really
can just imagine.
Stuff.
Because I don't know if this is a spoiler. Okay, if you watch The Mandalorian and you've not got caught up completely today, I suggest that you just skip about 30 seconds to a minute ahead of this so you don't get any spoilers. Okay, are you ready to skip? Skip now. Okay, for those of you that are up to date with The Mandalorian, that bit in one of the most recent episodes where I think it must be like a Jawa bounty hunter that The Mandalorian runs into. That bit with the jump pack. This model was put out just before that aired. So my God, was he on top of that. It was just hilarious. So yeah, people who have seen it will know what I'm talking about. But yeah, job to Graham on this
one. I'm not caught up, so you've spoiled that for me. There's no way for me to
it's
skip
not an
up.
Essential plot point, but for anyone who loves
Scrubs. No, it's fine,
scrubs.
Don't worry. I'm not really like that. It doesn't. Yeah. It's not like Darth Vader was his dad kind of thing. Yeah. So don't worry about it.
Turns out he's actually part Scrum. right, so yeah, Matt House, he posted to Necromunda Terrain Makers on Facebook a completed Zone Mortalis tile called the Maul 84. It's just beautifully painted and it's got so many little details on it. Like, it's got like this tech noir nightclub doors, like a little small arcade around it. Again, check the pictures. It's the best way you can appreciate what I'm talking about here. But Matt House, really nice work on that one. We've got Damien Johnson, who's done a really nice blue paint job on a Corpse Grinders gang. Again, this is something that you need to sort of see to appreciate. It's not a colour scheme that I feel I have seen anyone else do with Corpse Grinders, or at least nobody who's posted to Instagram and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So it was a bit of an out there one, but it really works, especially with the skin tone that he's chosen for it as well. So yeah, nice one.
No, it definitely really popped out when I saw them scrolling through the feed in the group. Yeah, really, really cool. Interesting take on them.
Eric Bowers, I think this is pronounced, posted into the Sump City Radio community group just a whole bunch of paintings that he's done that's influenced by Necromunda. And yeah, I mean, we've just seen so many artistic items going into the group, especially with Nectober that we did. So yeah, just really cool stuff. I would definitely recommend that you try and look that post up. We'll put a link back to it if we can.
Yeah, I'll link his Instagram account as well, because that's where I met Eric. If you can call it that. It's as good as anyone meets anyone in this day and age, to be fair. But I bumped into him on Instagram. He was listening to the podcast, and he's involved in doing some of the artwork for the Sunpulk project, which we'll talk about in another episode, because actually I think it'd be really interesting for people to kind of follow and support, because it's another
kind
of
put more time expansion. Towards that, I think.
But yeah, he's coming to the group. He's a big fan of the show, but he's a superbly talented artist. So yeah, definitely check those out. Some really haunting images.
Awesome. Right, last one of my points that I want to mention then is Dennis Hurlburt. Now, I don't know if he'll pick up on this or not, because the only place I've seen him personally post is in the Necromunda Terrain Makers group. Now, this is a guy who has clearly spent a lot of time around 3D software, because he has created a whole bunch of completely free STL files, which work perfectly, by the looks of it, with the Dark Uprising terrain. And it's just additions to that, so that you can leave like lids open on it and have things like toilets, med bays, science blocks, all kinds of really cool things. So I would strongly suggest, if you've got a 3D printer and you want to make some really cool stuff for your boards, go check this guy's stuff out. He is on a group called, I think it's like 3D Cults or something like that as well. So there are links that he's put up in his own post. So, you know, just go show him some love if you're into 3D printing. It's really cool stuff.
Oh, definitely. Really, really, the detail on it is immense. It boggles my mind. And like you say, it looks like it would just fit seamlessly into any existing terrain that you've already got, which is really cool, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Chris, what points you got?
Oh, right, let's have a look. Okay, so I'm going to give another shout out to James Ewan again this month. For 2 points he gets in this one. I posted a picture of a machine gun on a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
I just posted a picture. I just thought it was funny. I'm in this group called like Bizarre Guns or Bizarre Guns Bizarre or something stupid like that. And they post ridiculous and crazy and sometimes cool guns on there. It's just because I think they're funny, basically, no other reason. But I found a picture of, like I say, it's essentially a machine gun mounted to a wheelbarrow. Posted it in the group for shits and giggles, really. A few days later, James Ewan comes out and he's made the fucking thing out of styrene, brass rod, and this running Cordor model. And it's got the heavy stubber mounted on the top of it. And my God, it's perfect. It's just fucking incredible. Just genius. And the fact he's running it as a heavy stubber with suspensor, that's just so Cordor. It's amazing. No one's going to ever beat that for a suspensor for Cordor now.
Yeah, he's just, it's so cool.
Yeah. And the second one is his arms master for his Orlocks. It's still a work in progress at the moment, but it's like this bare-chested guy with a bowler hat. He's got two servo fists.
Oh, yeah, that dude. Yeah.
Whereas I took the two fists and did the thumb transplant, he's used the two separate arms from the arms master's model, so he's got a left and right arm, and yeah, then he's flipped one of the hands over like I did, but and he's just started creating this awesome plasticard exosuit, so like that'll count as his servo harness.
Yes,
but it's very it's like a cross between the power loader from Alien and those exosuits from, like, Elysium.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it just looks fucking brilliant, man. Yeah.
It does look very flavourful. It's a really cool model.
Yeah. So, again, well done, dude. And please check his stuff out, because he doesn't make a big song and dance about himself, but he's so goddamn talented. Obviously, I had Kit in there, so I don't need to mention that again, but Alex Cooper, a new member in the community, I just had to get him in, basically, after I saw his work on the other boards. I messaged him and said, look, I really like your stuff. You don't have to listen to the podcast, but we have this group. It's really cool and laid back, and you know what I mean? We're all crazy about Necromunda. I just think you'll get a lot of love for your stuff.
What do you mean he doesn't have to listen to the podcast? What kind of crazy talk is that?
No, It's the soft sell. Do you know what I mean? It's the guy who gives drugs outside of the school grounds.
Okay, carry on. Yeah. Carry on.
Come on, man. My methods are subtle. But no, he's done this. He's done a plethora of kit bashes. A lot of them are recreations of the Dramatis Personae from the books. So the Orlok dog, the DO60K19.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like it's got the hard case, but obviously there's no model for that, so he's took the hard case dog from the Enforcers, and he's took he's cut the head off, like left the big lower jutting jaw, and he's put one of the Orlok dog heads in.
Yes, yeah.
And it's just such a simple kit bash, but it's perfect. It's and those are the kind of things that really catch my eye. It's like he just thought of something that no one else had at the moment, and he just put his mark on that conversion from now on. He's done a sweet Betty Banshee where it's using one of the Blackstone Fortress or like escalation models.
Yeah, yeah.
With the kind of wires all coming out of a maw and the dual swords, really cool. And he's Cadaver Merchant, and I don't know what model he's used. It's like a green plastic, but it's like a massive obese.
Yeah, if it's the one that I'm thinking of, because I'm just trying to search for the pictures for this now, because I do recall this.
It's like a naked chest with an apron over the top.
It's got stitching across it.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's starting to get. Yeah, it's from the Alchemists group in what system was it like? Something like Dreadball, but not Guildball. That's it. The Guildball Alchemists group, I believe it is. That it's from. But yeah, he's done some really cool conversions, hasn't he?
Oh, he's done some really cool, unique ones as well for his Orlocks. He's in our group, but I know he's across some of the other boards as well. So Alex Cooper, yeah, definitely well worth checking his stuff out. Please, I always pick names that I can't pronounce. So Ekalat, Ekalat or Ekalat or Ekalate Purpurius. Basically Necromunda Worldwide, get a look on there if you can find that. We'll put a link in the information, because I'm sure I've murdered that guy's name. And it's just this really cool squat Venator with servo harness. It's got a thunder hammer and a heavy stubber, and it's all made using the Cadron overlords. Yeah. Those like steampunk dwarf things. Looks really sweet.
Nice.
Dark Spectre Minis, that's his name on Instagram. I forget the guy's name off the top of my head. He's in our group.
Yeah.
He's the guy who uses all the lighting, all the LEDs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dude, that there's just something cinematic about the way that his plasma generator, that he's got all of the bands lit up, and it's reflecting in, like, mirror smooth resin.
Yeah, that one, that was
it
so
just
good.
Looks Blade Runner and cyberpunk, and it's just like this... like this juxtaposition of decay in industry and neon beauty, and it's just hypnotic in its dichotomy. Superbly done stuff. I'm in awe of it. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Speaking of cyberpunk, a little hidden message in this episode. If the Christmas episode comes out late, that's probably going to be why, because I'll have probably got hold of that cyberpunk game that's coming out in December, because that looks so good.
I'm going to have to get Delta Hide Your Controller or something.
Not having it until you finish the episode. Right, cool, moving on.
Yeah, I've got a couple more, and then we can wrap this up. So this is a guy called Francisco. Again, I'm going to murder your middle name and surname, or double barrel surname. Transmagisto Telizzi. He has posted this in Nayamunda, which is a new kind of setting offshoot of Necromunda, but also worldwide kitbash converters. He's done this awesome Escher mono wheel and an Escher jet bike, and they're just completely scratch built. He obviously styrene, green stuff, and like little bits to kind of make it kind of fit in, but just really imaginative builds and phenomenal execution. Definitely worth checking out. And in fact, I've got two more. I left one off because I knew you wouldn't let me see it. The right. First one, Simon Westlake, obviously our friend and admin, Atterus on Instagram. Now, he's been throwing gangs out, dude. Like, that's what he does for his living. The speed at which he's thrown awesome builds together, getting them painted and ready for the board, he's doing it quicker than you can say anti-disestablishmentarianism. And that's saying something. But I think the jewel in his crown, it's got to be his awesome board. It just grows and grows, and he sends us photos, and he posts it on Instagram, and he posts it in the group. He's now incorporated the gang stronghold into it, and he's got like these cool stacks of containers, like made to look like hubs or shops. It's just like a living, breathing slice of Necromunda, and really cool, really pleased to be able to call him a friend. But he just, I think he posts, he keeps a lot of the stuff going and a lot of the themes and threads going. And I don't, I just wanted to make sure that he got some recognition for his talent. He really is a talented guy.
No, I completely agree.
Right, my last one. I can't.
Is this one on the list? Is this why you've not told me?
It's not on there. I haven't sent you a picture of it. I just wanted to give a shout out to the scrunts, mate. no, I know, but I knew if I asked, because, right, for all the listeners, obviously you've heard about the scrunts now, and if you haven't, essentially it's a concept, it's a Noblar body with a Skitarii head. And as simple as that is, the ways you can take it, the imagination you can invest in it, and the kind of the fun that it's brought to not just our group, but I've seen it spread out across groups. You know what I mean? I'm seeing them pop up on Instagram all the time. So Steve took just the concept by Bjarne Daly.
That's the guy, yeah.
And built his own gang, and then kind of he just got enthused with them. And it's not just that you've done the supplement. He's working on the supplement at the moment.
Slow going, but the thing is, people keep creating more and more scrunts in more and more crazy situations. And I'm like, how much of this can I actually put into this supplement? Already people have created things that are so far from the direction that I was taking it in. I'm like, is it going to have to be like a second volume of
but
this?
That's why I'm giving you a mention in this Hot in the Hive. And honestly, I had no idea about this because I knew he would not let me do it. But it's the way it's grabbed the enthusiasm and imagination of the whole community. And I think that's to be celebrated, dude. I'm really... But more so, I've read the lore. I'm going to be adding some little bits into it, you know, that aren't scrunt-related necessarily, that Steve's asked me to look at. But the quality of it is fucking phenomenal, man. It's like an official expansion. I was just blown away when you sent it to me. I thought it was funny. I thought it was a cool idea. And I read it and I was like, motherfucker, you should be working for them or at least writing your own fluff and stuff. It was really, really cool. But that's enough. You can get your trumpet out of your mouth and we can move on.
Oh, no, thanks for saying that, mate. But I'm just like so happy to see that people have just run with the idea and they've just taken it in directions that I wouldn't have even thought of. It's like just to put this out there, I have created a side group for scrunts because I saw that they were slowly taking over the actual main group for Some City Radio. And it's like, for people who don't know what this is or don't care, I don't want it just filling up the entire feed. So I created a separate group for it. And this is the weird thing. The only place that I have put a link to that group is in the Some City Radio group, which is a private group. I've got people joining it that aren't part of our group and haven't had the link shared to them because it would have told me that it's been shared or they've been invited by someone. Where the hell are they getting this link from?
We've
got like, I think over, probably close to like 100 people, I think now, if not more, in that group. And it's like, people have gone off and bought like giant spider kits from where I think it was, what's the equivalent of goblins in 40k and things like that? What's the name from it?
It is a goblin spiders, isn't it?
The goblin spiders. People have bought like giant spiders to stick these things on, and it's like, oh god, I'm gonna have to try and write rules for this at some point.
like I said, this is Steve's thing. He's run with this. He's made all of this. You know, he does all of his own art for it. It's just really cool to see. And I'm really chuffed for you that it's done as well. But it's just fun. So fun.
Oh, thank you. All I'm going to say is that I hope that the Ambot Fighting League that I'm going to do at some point takes off as much as this did.
That's all my points anyway, bud.
Awesome. Right, okay, well, that's us for Hot in the Hive there, folks. Up next, we've got our second instalment of Pub Tales. And again, for Pub Tales, if you've got any ideas for these segments, then, you know, get in contact with us and let us know. Let us know what you think of it.
In an effort to further engage with the local community, Sump City Radio placed a semi-functional servo skull with a tape recorder in a local drinking hole and offered a free drink to anyone who spares a moment to tell us their pub tales.
So, I'm told you want to hear a story.
That is correct. Please tell us your tale.
Well then. There's a toll road that winds its way down the Underhive into a place on the edge of the Bad Zones, known as Acid Falls. The access road was fought over by gangs hungry to seize control of easy credits from anyone passing through. And there were a lot of people passing through, due to the abundance of precious chemicals spewing out from the waste pipes of the Acid Falls settlement. Whoever was the ruling gang would exact their toll from travellers at the bottleneck bridge spanning a deep chasm known to the locals as Devil's Hole. Nobody ever saw fit to find out what was at the bottom of it, partly because of the strong winds that would pass through the chasm, making for a treacherous descent. The winds would emit a ghostly wail as it passed through the caverns too. But one gang found out. what was at the bottom of that hole. Unsurprising, it was a gang of cutthroat Eshes. They called themselves the Devil's Hole Girls. Whether they called themselves something before they got control of the bridge, who knows. But what they lacked in their creative naming, they made up for with straight brutality. One day, however, they set upon harassing the wrong people. Some Orlok gangers that had been hired to collect some goods for a guilder tried to pass into Acid Falls. Maybe the Devil's Hole Girls pushed too much for credit. Or maybe somebody took a dislike to a filthy look. The details are a little fuzzy on that. But the results... well... an exchange of words goes bad and one of the Orloks pulls out a missile launcher. Before he can get a shot off, he finds a throwing knife buried in his chest. And as he crumples to the floor, he fires the launcher straight down at the bridge beneath them, and the two gangs explode in fire and rockcrete. The Orloks manage to get one or two people away alive. They just run back the way they came. But the Devil Hole Girls, they weren't so lucky. Every single one of the Escher gangers on the bridge either got caught directly in the blast, was knocked over the side, or, as the bridge collapsed, weren't fast enough to escape plummeting down into the darkness of the abyss. Now, by all rights, they should have been dead. Every last one of them. They should have been broke and shredded or smashed beyond saving. But, as hard as it might be to believe, when the workers of Acid Falls came to the bridge to see what had happened, they could hear shouts of some of those Eshers down in the darkness. The workers considered mounting a rescue and sending someone down the side of the chasm with as much rope as they could find, but no one dared try. All of them were too frightened, you see, of the wails from the depths, the treacherous descent, and that if the rope broke for any reason, they'd share the same fate. Better to ignore the cries and rebuild the bridge, and with any luck, they would be dead soon and less of a distraction for it. So the workers resolved to continue repairing the bridge and ignoring the calls from what could only be imagined as fatally injured gangers below. But the cries were incessant. For a full day, the fallen Eshers cried out as the Acid Fall workers began their repairs. In their shame, the workers grew resentful of how these women clung into their lives. Why just not give up? Just die already. The sooner they did, the sooner their suffering would end, and the sooner the workers could attempt to forget what had happened. On the second day, the workers noticed that the wails from the depths were fainter. It seemed that the broken Eshers were finally accepting their fate, and that no help was coming. But then, the ever-decreasing audible sobs from the darkness ceased completely. And after a moment, the workers breathed a sigh of shameful relief. Seconds passed and the hive seemed even quieter than normal. The air from nearby tunnels stopped blowing. Then the silence was shattered, and an unholy, terrifying shriek that shook the very dome's walls. A dozen other screams joining in to create a demonic cacophony. And then... deafening silence. The workers dropped their tools and fled, running till their hearts were fit to explode and their veins burned like promethium. They decide that the Devil's Hole was as cursed a place, and that any alternative route for the trade would be better than courting the wrath of whatever was in that blackness. About a month passes. Traders have found some other way to reach Essid Falls, climbing over treacherous piles of trash or reopening disused service tunnels, I imagine. The workers who were on the bridge have begun to forget what happened and what they had done. A day cycle of toil and trading comes to an end and the lights go out. The workers collapse into their beds and hope for sleep. But an alarm is sounded, waking the workers from their cots, who rush outside to see what the problem is. The air is thick with some kind of foul mist. Everyone runs to get their rebreathers, concerned that this is some kind of accident or bad batch of waste chemicals mixing together. But something isn't right. There's an uneasy feeling in their stomachs, and the workers feel like they're being watched. They all gather at the central pumping station, manically staring out of reinforced slots in the doors and windows as they cower inside. And then, in the mist, several figures appear, barely visible, and they're coming forward. It's hard to see them, and there's an intensifying smell of rotting meat, a smell that conjures images of decay and sickness. The first figure to move forward into the dim light was a woman, wearing something like a crown on her head. Her long hair, greasy and limp, hanging over a deathly pale face. Her clothes must have once been fit for spire society, but now they were filthy and tattered, encrusted with dirt. And following behind her, it looked like plague zombies. It would explain the smell, but plague zombies are uncoordinated, and this figure, while slow and lumbering, didn't look uncoordinated. There was no growls or moans, just silence. The workers aren't fighters, but if they have to, they can hold a gun. Lockers are opened and pistols are seized. It's not much, but the weapons are pointed out of the windows at the approaching figures, and the triggers are pulled. The shells fire and hit their mark, exploding the sides of a head, tearing a hole through the side of a stomach. Another shatters the bone in an arm. But then the very same figures raise weapons out of the rolling mist, and the muzzles flash as they fire back. Everyone begins to panic, as this isn't something that plague zombies can do. The figures pass into the light of a nearby building, and the workers' blood turn to ice as they see the Devil's Hole girls. Pale, bloodied, dirty, impossibly wounded, but still standing, and worse, still moving forward towards the pumping station with a look on their mottled, disfigured faces that say they were here for one thing. Bloody revenge. There were, of course, some survivors. Otherwise, how would I be able to tell you that's what happened? Over the years, I've heard of tales of them reappearing, always linked to some big disaster, like a plague or a viral outbreak in the Underhive. Kinda like the one we're going through now. Looks like it's getting a bit misty outside. I might stay inside for another drink. You're buying, right?
Correct. Take this token to the bar. The proprietor has been instructed to give you a drink of your choice. Tale 2. Please state your name, followed by your tale.
My name is Abraham Longstaff. I'm a miner stationed in Outpost Delta 7. Well, that is to say, I was. Mining is in my blood. I come from a mining family. My daddy was a miner. His daddy before him and his before him. It's a tough job that breeds tough men. Long hours, back-breaking labor, and terrible conditions. But if you can stomach it, there's good pay to be had. Injury and death are considered part of the gig. I've lost count of the friends I've seen gassed, crushed, or ripped apart by machinery. My granddaddy used to say that we were born to it, that we were naturals, and that's why in 7 generations we hadn't lost a single man in my line. He was proud of that. And he was mighty proud of me the first time I got my assignment. He pulled me aside as my daddy was getting our gear ready and said, "Makes my chest swell to see you wearing that lamp, boy." I'd known 15 naming cycles, and I was about to be collected by the overseer to meet the caravan that would take us to the Ash Waste Outpost Delta 7. I beamed with pride, but inside I was a wreck. I'd seen so many of my friends bury their fathers and brothers that I couldn't ignore the danger of my situation. Seeing this in my face, my wise old granddaddy took me firmly by the shoulders and looked deep into my soul, his kind gray eyes, strong yet warm with love, as he said, "Boy, people think the trick to this life is getting used to the dark. Because if you think you know the dark, then let me tell you, boy, you do not. The dark of the Habs during blackouts is like a million lumens to these old eyes. Because when that cage hits the bottom of the shaft, you'll know the dark. The dark down there's different, boy. It's thick like crude promethium. It wraps around you, seeps into your skin, and soaks into your bones." Well, he could see I was starting to panic, so he gripped my shoulders tighter to make me focus again on his voice. "I want to tell you a secret, boy. One that will keep you safe as long as you remember what I say. It's not about getting used to the dark. That's just not possible. But you have lumens in your headlamp, and they will help. But boy, I have to be honest because you deserve it. Sometimes the lumens will fail and your lamp will lose battery. And it's going to be darker than burning your head and closing your eyes. Now don't fight it. Don't you hold your eyes open wide, because that'll make you panic. You need to trust your senses. Feel for the guide wires and stay put. Too many men have died losing their shit and trying to run. Just stay where you are. Nothing the overseer hates more than an operative face. And they'll be working flat out to get that shaft lit up and you work in again. So like I said, hold fast and stay put." He loosened his grip and flashed me a smile before saying, "The real trick to this life isn't getting used to the dark. It's making sure you leave it down there when that cage brings you back to the surface. It'll try to cling to you and come back with you. And you have to shrug it off, fight it, ignore it. Talk to your friends, crack wise, and make plans. Laugh and joke and think about home. Think about that cold wild snake hitting your lips. Whatever it takes, just put it out of your mind and leave it down there where you found it. Do you hear me?" He stood looking at me, smiling softly, his heavily lined face a map of his experiences, worn and weary, but radiating kindness. I nodded to show my understanding, and he nodded back to show he was satisfied that I'd listened. It was then my father shouted for me to grab my things to go. And all the way to the outpost, my granddaddy's words went through my head. Well, that was 25 solar cycles ago, and I haven't been a boy for many years. I run my own drilling crew now, and I have earned a modicum of respect as a reliable and hard-working man. My granddaddy is no longer with us. He died comfortable in his own bed, surrounded by his family. Emperor rest his soul. Well, I took his advice as imperial doctrine. Sure as shit that old bastard was right. Like I said, I've seen so many good men die, and I've come away with no more than a scratch from situations where all reason says I should be dead. Lucky. That's what they say. And as loath as I am to admit it, I often used to wonder if there was something in that. Used to, anyhow. All I know for sure is at the end of each shift, no matter how long, no matter how scared I've been, and no matter how many dead bodies have made the journey back to the surface with me, I've left the dark down there where I found it. That wasn't until the last lunar cycle. My shift started as usual, but as the cage descended, the overseer assigned my crew a new detail over the vox. Any kind of change in this job is cause for concern, and the younger boys were visibly fretting and starting to chat nervously. I motioned them to silence as I made a note of the change to our designated work face. Now, as a by-now old man in this game, I knew there'd been no blast in this cycle, so I knew there'd be no newly exposed veins to exploit, and I feared we'd be cleaning up debris from the last cave-in, which wasn't usually left to us drilling crews, but wasn't unheard of when quotas were raised or manpower was low. I was wrong. The tunnel we were directed to didn't show up on my data slate as an active or recently closed workface, but an old access tunnel to a depleted face last accessed over 130 years ago. I settled the crew and made no show of my confusion as the cage hit the level we needed, but as we disembarked and started the long journey on foot, my head was racing with questions. Why send a drilling crew to a depleted seam? There's no way the Lords of House Orlok would have closed this tunnel down without being absolutely sure that they had exhausted every vein. That's not how they work the mines. That's not the House of Iron's way. We walked single file and eight strong down the narrow tunnel, my chief engineer taking the lead while I followed up the rear, the two greenhorns sandwiched between us all. I could see they were trying to be brave in front of their more experienced crewmates, but I was taken back to my first shift and those quiet words my granddaddy spoke to me all those years before. I wondered if these boys had had similar talks with their daddies or granddaddies before making their way here. I was shaken out of my reminiscence by the vox bleeding with an incoming message. The instructions were barked through by one of the shift foremen telling me that we had to check out the maintenance servitor that was located at our destination. There had been a communication blackout with the unit for a couple of days and we were the first crew available. Our orders were located, identify any obvious issues, and if necessary, get it back to the cage to be lifted up for the tech priest to look at. Servitor maintenance units are often sealed up in disused shafts to ensure the integrity of the tunnels are not compromised by performing routine checks and repair work. Self-diagnostic and basic self-management mean that they can be left to toil away in the dark with only very occasional need for servicing. They report daily on tasks carried out and any issues that might need the attention of more cerebral solutions. I figured that a lobotomized bastard had probably fallen or gotten stuck, unable to get back to its charge unit, powered down, and being unable to fight its report. We'd get there, unseal the shaft, do a quick recce, retrieve the servitor, and get it to its charging dock and report back before getting reassigned to our usual detail. Straightforward enough job, a break for the boys, and a nice ease in to life as a miner for the two young'uns before the real work started. I allowed myself some small relief and smiled inwardly as we approached the blast doors. Taking a quick head count and satisfied my 8-man crew, all present and correct, I punched in the access code. The door hissed and slid open to reveal blackness. Now, this wasn't unusual, as the lumens were usually left for power saving, on account of the servitor having infrared and other ocular implants. This allowed them to toil away in the dark unhindered, and saved a few credits in the running cost. I pushed the switch, and the dull red glow of the backup lumens flared up, giving us a few feet of visibility. I sent the engineer to have a look, getting the main power up, and I told the other boys to stay put while I took a look around. I walked on into the shaft. The dull red light illuminated my way as the voices of my crew faded behind me. I clicked on my headlamp and scanned the walls of the tunnel, quickly locating the empty charging unit. As I unhooked the emergency battery, I smirked at being right and looked about for the fallen servitor, but my eyes were drawn to the unmistakable glint of an ore vein running through the face. Odd. I checked the data slate to confirm what I was sure I had read, and yes, it had been clearly designated as depleted. Unsure as to what this meant, I must have walked another couple of hundred yards before seeing a sheep slumped ahead of me against the tunnel wall. "You dumb bastard," I muttered to myself as I got closer. "Should be thanking you for the little detour." I knelt down to the fallen servitor and reached out to locate the access panel for the battery on the unit's back, but as the small door sprang open, it fell as though all of the air around stopped moving. I panicked momentarily, but got a hold of myself. If the ventilation systems had gone, sirens would be wailing, and I can't hear anything. Well, as soon as that thought entered my head, I realized that this was not a good thing. I couldn't hear anything. Nothing. The echo of my crew several hundred yards away was gone. The dull vibration of drilling and boring were all gone. In a mine this big, it was impossible to escape the noisy industry. And yet here I was in a pocket of silence. The dull red glow with the backup lumens washed everything with a sickly warm glow, but as I turned to look back towards the entrance, I could see maybe 10 feet in inches darkness. What was taking him so long? I shouted, "Jed, hurry with those lights!" But the sound, it didn't travel. In a mine shaft several miles long, the sound carries forever. My voice felt like I was in a small room with no echo whatsoever. The cold fingers of panic started stabbing again, and this time I couldn't shake them. I turned my attention to the servitor again, trying to distract myself and focus my thoughts. The optic of the unit was black and glassy due to a lack of power. Well, no surprises there, so I scanned my headlamp down its body to see if I could identify any obvious issues. When I got to its chest, my breath was ripped from my lungs. Strange shapes had been carved into the gray flesh of the servitor's torso in patterns that meant nothing to me, yet seemed to resonate with a memory I knew I'd never made. A word came to my mind. Ancient. I shook my head and gasped air into my lungs, forcing myself to breathe slowly as I tried to make sense of the vandalism. Who could have done this? Who would? Servitors are Mechanicus' property, and not a single man would dare to interfere with the operation without fear of severe reparation. Self-inflicted? Well, that's just impossible. Although once human, the capacity for independent thought was drilled from their brains upon creation, leaving them capable of very simple autonomy, and even that was heavily restricted by programming. I looked at the cuts and scars, neatly and intricately carved geometric patterns that looked to be executed with skill and precision. As I was examining the damage, my headlamp sputtered out, and quickly followed by the emergency lumens, plunging me into darkness. Panic became fear as I struggled to keep a level head. I reached out for the guide wires and pulled my back to the tunnel wall and slumped to the ground. "Stay put, and don't run." I repeated these words slowly, as if they offered some kind of ward against the dark. "Stay put, don't run. Stay put, don't run." The voice spoke in ice-cold words directly into my brain.
"We know you. Stay."
Pushed my palms to my ears to block out the sound, but still it crept across my mind like frozen nails.
"We have waited. We were deceived, and now you
Know me? Deceived? While the Emperor's name was happening, I tried to ignore the voice, thinking it has to be a gas leak, something messing with my mind. I pulled up my respirator and clicked the oxygen on.
Breathe deep, child. We need you to live. We are on 7 lives. We were treated. Deceived.
Shut up, I shouted. Shut up. This isn't real. It can't be.
Jebediah promised us. Now you must pay the price.
Jebediah? That name, it was... Well, it couldn't be. I pulled out my data slate again and selected archives, scanning, trying to locate the final report for this chef while pushing the dry, torn in laughter from my mind. There it was. Jebediah. Jebediah Longstaff. Realization hit as the name blinked on the screen. He'd signed off on sealing that shaft over 130 solar cycles ago. So he'd have been what, my great-great? I counted off on my fingers and my stomach churned as I reached the count of 7.
Yes! 7. 7 generations. 7 males. This was our pact.
My head slowly shook as I thought to the times I'd walked away from certain death.
The debt must be paid in full. We were cheated.
40 years of guilt flooded me as the death of every friend and colleague I'd witnessed played out before me in detail. Every anguished scream, every look of terror as I watched on helpless, lucky. The word felt dirty in my mind as the voice taunted me.
Not lucky, protected, blessed. We were promised freedom. We were cheated.
I tried to gather my thoughts, to rationalize what had to be some sick joke. But whatever machination was behind that voice, it cruelly taunted me, laughing its dry, ancient laugh at my pathetic attempt to cling to sanity.
Jebediah found us, released us. Our hunger was great, but he begged. We wanted him. His fear seeped from his pores, seasoning his flesh. But we could feel the billions above, seething billions of souls. We would feast for millennia. Take us to them.
That voice took great pleasure in my disbelief as it explained how they had struck a pact. Using his fear as leverage, they learned about the world above, the living mountains seething with countless more like him. They had lain dormant for an eternity and had never encountered something so complex as man. It described itself as between two worlds, unable to interact with either, forever hungry in the dark until Jebediah. His essence was like a light, a beacon in the black that drew them to his world, but still intangible, unable to touch or affect the physical, but strong with hypnotic influence. His mind was powerfully receptive to them, and it produced a delicious terror that they found intoxicating. Poor bastard. How could he have known that drilling in the blast den would reveal more than valuable ore? How could anyone? What's more, how the hell did he walk out of this place?
Deception.
The word was filled with bitterness and spite, and although it remained unsaid, another scene was played out before me. They had promised him he would keep his life. He and his line would never know misfortune if he would swear to free them. He was terrified beyond sense, driven almost mad at the impossibility of the situation, but utterly certain at its reality. In his desperation, he had agreed, but they hadn't counted on the complexity of a human mind. It was a great effort to communicate to a creature using something as restrictive as language. They knew fear and anger, emotions as ancient as themselves, but the layers of a mind had grown multitudinous since they last were free. The vast wealth of the human experience was a mystery to them, and that was his escape. I could feel it as certainly as Jebediah must have felt it then. He promised them freedom in exchange for his own, and in a moment of clarity among the fog of fear, he had convinced them to enter the servitor. He said he would tell his crew that it needed to be returned to the surface for necessary upgrades, and once there, it would be free. Now these things, this thing, unable to become corporeal, they were only able to touch minds, but they relied upon the willingness of the host. He explained to them that the servitors, although once like him, had been altered as a punishment, that they had forfeited their will and were subjected to lives of permanent servitude. In their greed and impatience, they agreed. Whatever infernal blessing they could bestow were uttered in a language beyond his comprehension. They then leapt aboard the mind of the servitor, but immediately recognized their mistake. Although the servitor could not deny them passage, it could not act of its own volition. They strained to control the body, but the constraints of its programming locked its movements into a set pattern of repetition beyond their influence. Jebediah felt immediate relief as the voice was no longer able to reach out. Thinking quickly, he steeled himself and pressed his vox communicator. Last blast unsuccessful. Over. End of vein. Over. Initiating closed out and maintenance protocol. Servitor maintenance unit G513. Activated. Over and out. The confirmation reply came through and his legs almost gave way beneath him.
Deceived! We demand our due. We demand that which is owed.
I thought of the 7 men I had brought here. 7 lies old. No.
Yes!
I became conscious of the battery in my hand and, without thinking, swung it. Clumsily connecting with the port in the servitor's back, hands shaking with terror, I forced it into place and snapped the door shut. The things, whatever they were, screamed in fury at this outrage, but before they could form words, the unmistakable hum of the power core coming online cut them off. The solitary red light in the optic flickered into life, and the servitor attempted to stand. A blown piston hissed as air escaped, preventing one leg from engaging with the driving gears. So that explains the lack of power. Unable to return to its charging unit, it had simply ran down. The lack of power had obviously allowed this thing some freedom. The air seemed to rush back into the tunnel, and with it the lights flickered and washed the darkness away with a blue incandescence. I looked again at the sorry thing writhing spastically on the floor, but was startled by voices, not cold and ancient, but warm and familiar. I could hear them walking towards me, but I shouted to go, get to the doors. I scrambled to my feet and rushed to join them. I detected a gas leak further down. Engage rebreathers and let's get out of here, I told them. Once on the other side of the door, I hit the vox, knowing what I had to do. Gas levels reading above safe. Over. Atmospheric seals compromised. Over. Servitor maintenance unit G513. Organic components corrupted due to a lack of nutrition. Brain fully dead. Over. Recommended course of action. Infill. Over and out. The confirmation of receipt came through with the order of activation of the infill protocol. I quickly input the command to the door's keypad and watched through the porthole as the lights flickered out, and the sound of a million tons of rockcrete rushing in to fill the tunnel to render it structurally sound became deafening. I turned to my crew and signaled to head back. It was the longest journey I ever made, and it was the last time I ever rode the cage. I still can't explain what that thing was, or what those things were. And if I never find out, then that's fine by me. But I lost my nerve for the dark that day, and I swore to myself I'd never go underground again. I can't shake the thoughts of what could have happened if that thing ever reached the surface. But I did what my granddaddy said. I left the dark down there, where I found it. I think I'll take that drink now, and probably another after that.
Please take this token to the bar for a free drink. Have a nice day.
That's all for now. We hope you enjoyed this chance to listen to some pub tales.
Toss a crab to your DJ, some city of plenty, some city of plenty. Toss a crab to your DJ, some city of plenty.
Help support Sump City Radio by heading over to our Patreon page. Patreon.com/Sump City Radio. Help support the show and allow yourself to feel epic. Now, back to the studio.